Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Om Shri Sai Ram. Welcome to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanti Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. On May 25th, 1947, just 3 months before the birth of independent India, a young Satya Sai Baba wrote a letter to his elder brother. Baba was 20 years old at that time, and in the letter he mentioned, "My dear one, I have a task to foster all mankind and ensure for all of them lives full of bliss. I have a vow to lead all who stray away from the straight path again into goodness and save them. I am attached to a work that I love, to remove the suffering of the poor and grant them what they lack. Truth will certainly triumph, authenticity will win. I will not give up my mission nor my determination. I do not belong to any place. I am not attached to any name. No one can comprehend my glory, whoever they are, whatever the method of inquiry, however long the attempt. Thus, your Baba." Today, on Thursday, April the 25th, 2013, 66 years later, the Global Sai family conveys the following sentiment to Baba through Morning Glory. Dear light of our lives, on April 24th, 2011, you rose to shine and guide us from above as the cosmic radiance. With your transition to pure consciousness, your tasks became our tasks, your vows became our vows, and your mission ours to carry on. We accept this gift of divine grace and humility. With humility, today, we ask for your blessings to be able to walk the path you walked and live your message of responsible citizenship, honesty, volunteerism, broad-mindedness and selflessness without ever forgetting that you're always guiding us and guarding us to march on without any fear. Love, hugs and Sai Ram, thus your global Sai family. Offering myself at the lotus feet of our Lord Sai, the voice and listener, the heart and soul of Radio Sai, this is your host Karuna. On the audio console is Brother Yatharta. Dear listeners, welcome once again to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, coming to you from the Radio Sai studios in Prashanti Nilayam. Thank you very much for joining us on this beautiful Thursday morning, April the 25th, 2013. The time right now in Prashanti Nilayam is 9:46 a.m. Current weather conditions in Prashanti Nilayam: the temperature right now is 30 degrees Celsius with clear sunny skies and an expected high of 38 degrees later in the day. Yesterday, on Aradhana Day, Swami blessed us with much milder weather conditions and we enjoyed a cloud cover throughout the day, which really helped us with all the outdoor activities that we had to carry out yesterday. It is indeed hard to believe that 2 years have passed since that fateful morning on April 24, 2011, when our lives spun topsy-turvy with the news of Bhagwan's transition to the formless. The eerie silence in our empty hearts has finally found solace at the sacred site from which oozes divine inspiration and great cosmic action, the holiest spot on the face of the planet, the Mahasamadhi of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. To the cosmic energy field that emanates from the Mahasamadhi, we bow over and over again. Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Sai Ram once again. This is Morning Glory on Thursday Live. Today is April the 25th, 2013, and the time in the studio is 9:48 a.m. Here's what's making news in Prashanti this morning. 3 days of commemoration programs dedicated to global peace and well-being mark the second anniversary of Baba's Mahasamadhi. thousands thronged to the Divine Valley to participate in the three-day yagna and the wonderful music programs and the humongous humanitarian projects that were carried out here. And the entire Aradhana festival was marked by well-thought-out and executed service activities by Baba's devotees in the ashram, across India and around the globe. Yesterday, the Central Trust held a massive Narayan Seva for the needy at the Sri Satya Sai Hillview Stadium here in Parthi. Thousands from nearby villages gathered at the vast venue to receive new clothes and a sumptuous meal as part of the commemoration day activities. All of us here in the ashram also enjoyed delicious free food served in the tall tents set up behind the northern blocks of the ashram. Also, in every single state of India, huge humanitarian projects were undertaken by Sai devotees to express reverence for the extraordinary life of their mentor, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Devotees in Bangalore city alone, for instance, served 45,000 meals to the city's needy population. 45,000 meals is a lot of meals. Many of us tend to equate the state of Maharashtra with Mumbai, which is India's financial capital and home to some of the wealthiest Indians. Yet the state of Maharashtra is experiencing a deadly drought this year. The Sai Organization of Maharashtra and Goa chose to commemorate the Aradhana Day by undertaking unprecedented relief work for those suffering due to this drought. Both suffering humanity and cattle were served food, clean water and supplements, and the Sai Organization of Maharashtra and Goa is undertaking extensive measures and spending considerable resources to bring water to the suffering millions, both two- and four-legged. They are also providing full grocery hampers to thousands of families to meet, actually to 2,000 families to meet their needs for the next 2 months, in the hope that this will enable them to tide over the drought period. Across India and around the world, Sai devotees are organizing blood donation drives, holding medical camps, veterinarian camps, feeding the poor, distributing household items, building homes for the homeless, providing water relief in drought-affected areas, and handing out groceries to those in need. And this sort of goodwill is going on in all parts of India as well as abroad to mark the passage of the one who taught humanity that service to man is indeed service to God. In the US, for instance, the Sai centers in the mid-Atlantic region are offering 25 service projects as a tribute to the lotus feet. All the way from New Jersey and New York to Pennsylvania and Washington and in many other places, devotees served in soup kitchens, undertook reconstruction and rebuilding work in storm-affected areas, and planted trees. Everywhere, Sai devotees redeemed their pledge to love all and serve all on the occasion. Today on Morning Glory, we commemorate God's visit to earth for 85 years by celebrating His living legacies, His ability to motivate millions to rise above self-interest and to reach out to others in the spirit of selflessness. Befitting the occasion, we are happy to bring you two very significant interviews this morning. At the bottom of the hour, I will bring you the concluding part of my in-house Fleeting Moments interview with my colleague, Brother Raghuram Bhatt. But before that, a Radio Sai exclusive interview coming up right here, right now. Sai's glory, his divine story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Dear brothers and sisters, Sai Ram once again. Here is a very special conversation that assumes even greater significance in light of the history that shook the universe 2 years ago on April 24, 2011. And it addresses a lot of pertinent questions that arose in the trail of this historic event. For instance, how are Bhagwan Baba's legacies faring in the aftermath of the Mahasamadhi? What sort of a growth trajectory are they following? What are their challenges and what is the vision going forward? Who better to talk about his living legacies and their future than the person that Bhagwan entrusted with several key responsibilities for taking his mission forward? An engineer by training, an industrialist by vocation, and a devotee by commitment, Chennai-based Mr. V. Srinivasan stands at a unique intersection in the Sai mission. He is the All India President of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization, a vibrant and dynamic NGO active in every Indian state. Mr. V. Srinivasan is also a trustee of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust at Prashanthi Nilayam, as well as of a number of other trusts within the ashram. Handpicked by Bhagwan for various important roles, Mr. V. Srinivasan has been serving his master Bhagwan Baba for 4 decades now. His wife, Mrs. Vidya Srinivasan, has also contributed significantly to the Sai Mission through its Bal Vikas program, and you can visit her interview on our website, radiosai.org, keywords Vidya, V-I-D-Y-A, Srinivasan, S-R-I-N-I-V-A-S-A-N. Now, just a few days ago, I had the privilege of interviewing Mr. V. Srinivasan, the person with the most likely answers to the questions on the minds of many about the Central Trust and the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization and their future. And here it is for your listening pleasure. Sir, Mr. Srinivasan, and thank you, sir, for joining us today.
Sir, I'm Karna. It's good to be with you again.
Glad to hear that, sir. Sir, the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization that you have headed for decades now is possibly the largest service-driven non-governmental organization in India, ever ready to serve in the name of Sai anywhere, anytime. How is it faring since April 24, 2011?
Karna, I think first I have to clarify that the Satya Sai Seva organization is both a spiritual and a service organization. It is not a religious organization. So, spirituality motivates us for further service. And I think when we serve others, it helps us on our spiritual journey. Now, with regard to your question as to how the organization is faring since the Mahasamadhi in 2011, it is Bhagwan's grace that has really widened all the activities of the organization. Mm-hmm. I had a vision and I was constantly praying to Bhagwan to guide me in this difficult task of this Satya Sai Seva organization. In fact, I think you know that when Bhagwan suddenly entrusted this responsibility to me in 1999, I didn't have a clue as to what I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I had asked Bhagwan as to, on that particular day itself, as to what I expected to do and that he should guide me. And Bhagwan's answer was that I should go and visit all his devotees all over India, and then I would know what is to be done. Mm-hmm. And frankly, when I did that, I learned many lessons. I learned of the depth of the devotion which people have for him. The people, many of whom had not even seen him in his physical form, but still they were totally devoted and dedicated to him and to his mission. So that really, I would say, lit a lamp in my heart as to how effective and how important to the redemption of humanity this particular organization is. Mm-hmm. Since the Mahasamadhi, we have broadened the activities of all the three wings, the spiritual wing, the educational wing, and the service wing. Let me just say in brief that it is far more vibrant today than it was in the a decade ago. And Bhagwan continues to inspire and motivate all the Sai workers. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. And they feel Bhagwan far more personally now than when he was in his physical form. Perhaps it would be appropriate for me just to digress a bit.
Sure.
When you use the word the legacies. Mm-hmm. You know, after a lot of introspection, as to what would be Bhagavan's legacy, I felt that the legacy of Bhagavan is not just that the institutions which he has created, the university, the hospitals, the water projects, they continue to flourish and they continue to grow, no doubt. But that was not his total legacy. I think the legacy, his real legacy, is the lamp of love which he has lit in the millions of people, in the hearts of the millions of people, which continues to inspire them, to draw them closer to him and his divine mission. So that, to me, is his real legacy, not the structures you see of cement and concrete, but the citadels which he has built in the hearts of the people. And these are the real kingdom of heaven. And this is what drives all of us. It drives the organization. And I could go into details if you wanted to know.
Yes, please.
But let me just put an overall answer. That the organization is flourishing. It's growing. And today it has got a new dynamism because we have put a lot of emphasis on younger people. The youth and the younger leadership is now gradually taking over at many levels in the organization. And we intend to intensify this transition of leadership. The young who have the energy, who have the strong devotion commitment, some of them may not have been very close to Bhagavan before, but I won't say that has affected their devotion and their commitment. And I think you will see in the coming years how these youth are taking forward the whole organization. You would have heard about the retreat which we held in Vrindavan, and I think you
covered
that.
Yes.
And that was where all the oldies, including myself,
the seniors, the seasoned elders.
Yes. We sat in the audience and listened to the young people on every aspect of organizational activity. And we have taken those recommendations forward. So many working groups have been formed. And let me tell you, starting day after tomorrow, we have a sadhana camp for the state presidents and the All India president. And this is going to be conducted by the youth for 3 days.
Quite a role reversal.
So this is part of the, I would say, the transformation process and also the transitional process. It is both. It is both a transition as well as a transformation. So, and they are going to take us through the theme which they have selected.
Which is?
Is the 9-point code of conduct.
Okay.
So, the senior leadership, to borrow your words, are going to be reoriented and redirected to the roots of the organization.
So it's back to basics.
Which lie within the charter which Bhagavan gave to it. So I think you will see, and there are many such activities. We are going to have a national bhajan workshop in June in Vrindavan. And there are going to be several such operational activities which give credence to all the recommendations. It was not just something we listened and filed and forgot. We are putting them into action
that.
So the organization through these processes gets greater involvement and also acquires a new generation of leadership.
Very well said. I agree with that. There's one specific area which is absolutely astounding about the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization, and that is the fact that we are incorporating technology as well as local culture to achieve deeper penetration. And under this program called the Sri Satya Sai Village Integrated Program, where we are going out of our way to help people till we empower them, and there is a very strict with everything that is related to Bhagwan, a no proselytizing policy. So as a result of it, we are having such a huge buy-in. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit more about this program and how it began?
You see, Gram Seva was always a very important objective of the Sai organization, because Bhagwan had always said that if you want to do Ram Seva, first do Gram Seva. And he always believed that the traditional values of India, of Bharatiya Samskriti, as he put it, resided in the villages, while the urban areas, due to the influences of Western civilization and so-called materialistic progress, have suffered in this respect quite a bit. So he emphasized the importance of Gram Seva to make sure that the organization does not lose contact with the traditional values of India. And you know, for example, the university Gram Seva.
Yes. Every
year after year, how it exposes our university students to life in the villages surrounding Puttaparthi, and how they cover about 130 to 150 villages on each occasion.
And it's quite a cultural shock even to children raised in Indian cities.
Exactly. So the Gram Seva was always a strong point of the things to do in the organization's mandate. But on Ugadi, if I'm right, whether it was the Ugadi of 2009, if I'm right, I could be, or 2008, he paid a particularly strong emphasis to the importance of Gram Seva in his speech. And he said that I direct that all of you should now be involved more and more in Gram Seva, to look at the total needs of a village from every family. He wanted us to serve every single family in every lane of the village and prepare a master plan rather than an occasional on-again, off-again kind of visitation and camps which were done sporadically. So this was the genesis of the SSS VIP program, which is the Sri Satya Sai Village Integrated Program, where we realized that Bhagwan wanted us to take this as a holistic activity rather than a casual activity. So what we did was that we had to identify the villages after a detailed socio-economic survey. There were some ground rules and benchmarks that every such village integrated program activity, the responsibility had to be taken up by the nearest samiti. Mm-hmm. That was one. And the second was that it should typically be a village which has a population not exceeding 1,500. To make it manageable. Mm-hmm. So, with these two criteria placed before the program, the Sai organizations in India, in all the states, made a detailed survey of many places. Another thing we wanted to do was to use what is called the cluster concept, so that by our activity in one village would benefit a command area of villages around that village and also generate for us volunteers when we move on from the village to another village for seva. So we wanted people to work with us, because always the credo which we have adopted is that we work with you, we do not work for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that there is total local participation.
Buy-in by the
peoples on that. So with this, we started to select particular villages which we wanted to adopt as a VIP village. And today there are about 1300 villages spread all over India where the SSS VIP program is done. This is apart from the 2700 villages where we do the Gram Seva.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between VIP and Gram Seva is this. That while in Gram Seva we do a lot of service activities like conducting medical camps and organizing bhajans and doing cleaning of the ponds and reconstruction of the roads, etc. But this was not starting from the bottom where all the basic building blocks of a village, which is the smallest family on that. This was as a sort of a macro program rather than a micro program. The SSS VIP village program is a micro program where we have complete statistics of every single family in the village. We provide for them all 7 types of cares. The care being the educare, the medicare, the socio care, the agricultural care. So all these cares are looked after. We have complete records of what are the needs of a particular family, not just the village, of a particular family. And from this we build a master plan for the village. It's a bottom-up approach rather than a top-down approach.
Mm-hmm.
So the program which is structured to provide these cares, which includes within it all the other aspects like Medicare and the construction of roads, sanitation, water supply, water purification, etc. But the whole plan for every activity is structured on the basis of the totality of the needs of the individual families.
It makes you wish whole of India was governed like this. If development was planned from this perspective, India would not be, Indian villages would not be in the state they are in. So both Gram Seva as well as the VIP program coexist simultaneously?
Exactly, because not every samiti is capable of taking the SSS VIP program.
It's a very big responsibility.
So only those samitis which have the manpower resources, the professional capabilities and who are not too far from the adopted villages can take up an SSS VIP program.
Mm.
And it's a continuing commitment. It is not just you go there once a month.
Mm.
That is not the kind of activity. It is a continuing activity which we made a target for us that we will not stay in a particular village more than 5 years. Initially we thought that we will be there for 3 years. But we have extended it to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
While in the Gram Seva, it is an activity where people who desire to serve come there on a sporadic basis. You know, it is not, we may have a medical camp once a month.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not take care of the totality of the medical needs, the preventive hygiene, the nutrition,
the education.
Aspects, education of the individual families. And for example, in the medical camp, you set it up on the periphery of the village and expect the villagers to come to you.
Mm-hmm.
While in the case of the
VIP program,
we have to first ascertain what are the problems of the individual villagers and then structure the medical camp activity which we do.
Mm-hmm.
So these two exist side by side within the organization. And there is no conflict between them.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sure that every person in this organization has an opportunity to serve. And the structure of the organization is such that it provides him the best vehicle for doing the kind of service which he would like to do on that. So these two exist side by side.
This is one incredible NGO story, and the magnitude and the depth and the attention to detail, because I've had opportunities to read about some of the activities, it's actually making a real difference in so many people's lives.
Yes, I can unequivocally tell you that the social fabric of the SSI's VIP villages has changed quite a bit. There's new confidence among the villagers. Many of them come to Puttaparthi on their own. And many of the social evils which existed, like alcohol and other things, are disappearing. Respect for the girl child is also initiated. And the belief in the equality of all religions, and also confidence in their own heritage to observe their own traditional festivals, and also to not to forget their traditional handicrafts. All these are now given a fillip by the SSS VIP program on that. And we are also looking at one important aspect which concerns the whole of India,
which
is to make the youth employable. You see, in spite of so much which is said about the demographic dividend, we cannot forget that in the context of the needs of today's, the 21st century economy, you just don't need just a pair of hands. You need a pair of competent and capable hands. And this is one aspect that we are paying attention to, and creating the skills and the training so that the youth in the villages are employable. And we are definitely looking to make sure that the people don't leave the villages, or at least stay within the district rather than migrate to the urban areas. I cannot say that we have been successful in every area, but it is making a difference. And people are finding that they can do better things in their own home areas rather than to migrate to slums
in urban areas. We have had some young people from the SSVIP program from Maharashtra, for instance, and they resonated the same sentiment, how the program empowered them and made them employable. In fact, I remember one young gentleman said that he was taught to use computers under the SSVIP program, and he now runs the program for the Sai organization in his village, and he was drawn there only because of the bhajans.
Yes.
It was a very interesting story.
See, we never forget what Bhagwan taught us, that bhajan is the first point of contact of any person with the Sai mission.
Yes.
So there is a great responsibility that the bhajan should be melodious. Bhajan should be one which melts the heartstrings and makes person so attracted to whoever is organizing the bhajan. And the fact that we play equal emphasis to all the icons and all the gods and the
faiths
on them. That has a great thing to do, and we never forget that. In fact, the very, very first activity we organize in any village, whether it is under Gram Seva or under SSS VIP, is the bhajan.
Sir, you spoke of the girl child, the education of the girl child, and I know it's a centerpiece of the Sai mission because Swami started his first college for women. And recently, the 100th Satya Sai school that came up in Hisar, Haryana, is also for little girls exclusively. You were present at the occasion.
Yes.
Would you like to tell us a little bit more about the Satya Sai schools, the 100th school in particular?
Yes, you see, this school has come up in Hisar, I did not initially know that it was for girl children. But later, when the people who were planning it talked to me, I said, gave them the go-ahead that yes, this is something which is very dear to Bhagwan's heart. And once the Bhumi Puja was done, and everything seems to fall in place by itself, a couple in that area came forward to donate the land of nearly 5 acres for the school on that. And they don't have any children of their own. But still, they felt inspired and motivated.
Very enormous hearts.
To give this land for the school. And then people chipped in, you know, and there was no say that particularly the Haryana State Organization or the Haryana State Trust – is not a very affluent one. But Bhagavan gives the affluence.
Yes.
And they have put up a very, very nice modern building. I was particularly pleased to go through the building to see the classrooms, to look at the kind of blackboards. They are no longer blackboards.
They are whiteboards and smartboards.
I don't think they are smartboards, but they are these kind of green boards, you know, which you have. And they look far better than the old conventional blackboards where you wrote with a piece of chalk. And the furniture for the children seem to have paid a lot of attention. The color combinations used in the structure of the buildings are particularly Swami's colors, very modern kind of structure. The lobby is very impressive, all floored with granite and all that. And it is particularly appealing and most important, in spite of all these costs, they are not going to charge any fees.
Mm.
So, you know, there's already such a lineup of people who want to admit their children.
Little girls.
To the...
And in Haryana, given the culture, it's extremely important that girls have access to free quality education, that to character education.
And you can be sure Bhagavan will direct the efforts into the area of the greatest need.
Absolutely.
So perhaps he selected Haryana. You know, I've been very strict on people who come up with desire to build up schools.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
We wanted to make sure that the schools are run properly. As you know, the 99 Satya Sai schools which had been set up prior to this one which was inaugurated, they were mostly set up by devotees who came to Bhagwan with a desire to do something and proposed to him that they will set up the school. Mm-hmm. And very often they have been set up in rural areas, in backward areas. And people thought just by setting up a building you have a school. But in the modern context, buildings are the least which are there. You need a far wider nature of infrastructure. And you have to, things like, you know, you need to have toilets. All these, you know, the Satya Sai organization since the last 3-4 years have taken the responsibility to upgrade all these schools. So I had put it as a cardinal principle that we'll first pay attention to improvement of existing schools.
The 99 existing.
Before we embark on any addition. But, as they say, there's always an exception and there is something which makes people agree to that exception. And perhaps it was Bhagwan's intuition which he gave me that we should agree to the school. And I must say that without naming figures, I see that they have already built up a good corpus to make sure that the salaries are properly paid to the teachers and all other facilities are given to the schools, to the children and to the schools. So, I'm very, very happy with that school which I inaugurated, I think, a week back. When I was in Hisar.
And we saw the pictures. Everybody was so exuberant. You could feel Swami's presence in the joy on their faces.
Yes.
It was very beautiful. Now let's talk about the Seva Dal. These chosen instruments of Swami's love who express their devotion through acts of selflessness. What are their points of contact for serving? They serve in their samitis as well as in the ashram?
I would say the service they do in the ashram is consequential to their being members of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
So first and foremost, they have to be members in the organization.
At the samiti level.
At the samiti level. And they have to be active in local service. And as you know, the seva which is done in the ashram by the states is done on a regular roster. That every state has got a particular month when it has to come and do seva here. We have insisted that the Seva Dal, before they come, must be given adequate briefing as to what is Prashanti Nilayam, what is their role here, what is expected of them, how they should do Seva here, all that. We want to make sure so that they become useful to the ashram and the residents and the devotees who come to the ashram, rather than just come here and stand and not know exactly what is expected of them. So in answer to your question, yes, the first point of contact and the first point of service is the samiti and the local organization. And through that, they come to Prashanthi Nilayam, which is on the basis of a statewide deputation of people on that. So you see, nearly you have almost between 800 to 1,000 gents who come in each batch, and nearly about 600 to 800 ladies who come for the seva at Prashanthi Nilayam.
That's a very large workforce. Do you foresee the organization being able to sustain this movement, because the requirement will only increase?
Well, let me put it the other side of the picture. We don't want to have an oversupply of sevadal, because the ashram also has to become efficient in the use of the sevadal. You know, we should not just assume that where we can do with one, we can have, you have got four or five, because they are available. That is not true, because we have asked the ashram to reassess the need of sevadal. Because keep in mind, all these people come here at their own expense.
Very true.
And today travel costs are not cheap, and they spend a lot of their own money to come here.
And they have vacation time.
Exactly. Whether it is vacation time, even some people come during periods they are working. They take leave from their present vocations and come here. So we owe it to them also that we use them in the optimal manner, rather than just to say come as many as you can. That is not true. So definitely, I think, you know, with the spread of the organization, the spread into the villages, we get more and more people who are willing to come, who want to visit Prashanthi Nilayam to express their gratitude to Bhagwan. So I don't see that there's going to be a problem in sustaining this cadre of devoted volunteers. And as the ashram expands and the institutions like the hospital, university, the schools and all expand, there will be increase. And that I'm sure we can be able to fulfill from the increasing number of sevadal which will come from the states.
I guess the organization is growing organically into the heartland of India.
Exactly.
So people will be motivated to express their thanks to service.
Exactly.
And they will continue to come. Now, all over India, I understand the Aradhana Mahotsavam is being commemorated to reflect the extraordinary life that Swami lived. And there are massive efforts and service projects going on in Maharashtra, in Goa, in Karnataka, in various parts of India to mark this occasion. Would you like to just bring us up to speed?
Well, you see, first I would like to tell you that, you know, we have now made the Aradhana Mahotsavam as one of the vital occasions when we have all to be here. You know, for us in the organization, apart from the other festivals, there were festivals which were vital for us. That is the Shivaratri, Guru Purnima and birthday. Of course, while people also attended the other festivals like the Ugadi, the New Year, and then the Dasera, etc. But non-negotiable was the presence at the three festivals. Now we have decided that the Aradhana will be one festival which will perhaps replace one of the others on them. And therefore, the presence at Puttaparthi of the office bearers and also of the sufficient number of the members of the organization vital. In addition, the observance of the Aradhana Mahotsavam and the communication on that occasion of the details of Bhagavan's divine mission are sine qua non for the organization. And we observe this through service. As I mentioned to you, the legacy of Bhagwan is the incentive and inspiration for service. Mm. And so the observance of his Mahasamadhi cannot be observed in a better manner than doing seva. So whether it is massive food distribution, Narayan seva, or whether it is observance of hospitals and assistance to education, renovation of schools, etc. All over India, this program is now becoming widespread.
And I understand there's a severe drought in Western India, and the Sai organization is going out of its way to help with water supply in those areas.
Exactly. The organization has now, in the drought-affected districts of Maharashtra, organized special tankers to get water at least once a day to each village. They are undertaking a massive expenditure on this account. Also, food is being sent not only for human beings but for the cattle, because most what happens during periods of famine and drought is people just abandon their cattle
because they have to choose between feeding themselves or the cattle.
And you have lakhs and lakhs of cattle, you know, which is part of the national wealth of India, die during such drought. So the organization is making sure that things like fodder, protein meals, etc. are supplied to the drought-affected districts in the various states on that. Maharashtra is particularly active in this.
I see. Now, from the service-driven Sri Satya Sai Seva organization, I'd like to move on to the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, of which you are a key member. Since the Mahasamadhi 2 years ago, how would you rate the progress report of the Central Trust?
Let me take you back these 2 years when the trustees suddenly found themselves in the hot seats.
Yes.
Because prior to that, everything was done by Bhagavan and by His grace. And we were admiring observers and thankful that He was keeping us close to Him.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps to shake us out of our lethargy, He suddenly put us into this play, into this hot seats. It's only then that we realize how demanding is the running of the Satya Sai Central Trust.
And Swami made it seem so easy.
Yeah, and I mean, he made it things as if it was happening just without any attention to it.
Autopilot or something.
It was an autopilot. Mm. And on the other hand, on one side it was being run by divinity, and now it was going to be run by human beings. All of us, of course, devoted to Bhagwan, but at the same time, we are human. And we had to make sure that the same credibility of the Central Trust was maintained as it was when Bhagwan was present. So our first tasks initially were sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure that people don't feel that everything is going to come to a stop.
Mm-hmm.
And by His grace, I won't say by our efforts, yes, we tried to do what we could, what we are competent or capable of. But by His grace, every single institution which He set up is running just the way as it was prior to His departure from this physical form. Whether it is the ashram, whether it is the university, whether it is the hospitals. And if I may, with humility, say that there's a lot of improvement, a far more feeling of professionalism. And people are feeling their own responsibilities now, that they are responsible to Bhagwan. Previously they felt, oh, Bhagwan will take care of everything. But now they realize that, yes, Bhagwan is there, but He has given me this responsibility. So I cannot prove false to Him.
Mm-hmm.
So you find a greater awareness and commitment to their respective tasks. We also, as trustees, right in the beginning decided that we had to be absolutely transparent. We cannot have as if we are running a secretive organization. And you know, you went through those periods when the media played, had a field day and all kinds of figures of assets and wealth and all were all bandied about. We published annual reports.
Everything is out there.
There's no, I would say, maybe one or two, the Tata Trust do that, and maybe some one other trust. But no other public charitable trust in India, out of the thousands and thousands of trusts, publishes an annual report, which is an audited report, which gives full details of financials, which also gives full details of all activities. So everybody who reads that report, and it's now on our website, you don't even have a hard copy of it. You can just log in and you have all the information. And that has greatly reassured people that things are going on run by these so-called trustees, human beings. At least they have not let what Bhagwan set up, what divinity set up, go to pot on that. So in a macro answer to your question, all the institutions of the divine mission are running well, and they will expand.
And there have been some new initiatives that the Central Trust has taken.
Yes, you see, we have, the first thing was to make sure that our hospitals are also the most modern. We have not shied away from making new investments. We are going to spend this year in the budget which has been approved is over 40 crores of rupees for equipment, for new equipment as well as replacement of older generation equipment in the two super specialty hospitals at Puttaparthi and Whitefield. As far as the university is concerned, we are now talking about a center for advanced studies, which Bhagwan had indicated that he was very keen to have it done so that those students of his who passed their PhD and wanted to do their postdoctoral work, many of them are CSIR fellowship holders. They also hold fellowships from the Department of Science and Technology. We wanted to provide avenues for them to be able to do their research work here rather than having to go elsewhere on this. So we hope to get this center up and going. The Vice Chancellor also is fully on board, and he has a mission to get the center organized and inaugurated and commissioned as early as possible.
We see a very beautiful big building going up. Is that what it is?
No, I think it is. That is another building there, but there is a new in that complex. The Center for Advanced Studies will come up on there.
I see.
And as you know, the water project Bhagwan had set up, the Anantapur Rural Drinking Water Scheme to supply water to 750 villages. There were some villages in certain parts of this district which had been left out in that, and he had wanted that to be completed. So another 118 villages in the three mandals of this district, the work has already been launched. And we hope to get it completed within about 18 months on that. Orissa, he had desired that we should do 1,000 villages. That time in the first phase we completed 700, and the other 300 we expect to complete in about a month's time in Orissa on that. And then, you know, we have some of the softer areas. We have now taken steps to modernize all our accounting systems to make them system-based rather than individual-based. We hope to stop any manual preparation of checks or manual voucher writing, all of them will come out of the computers, and to make sure that all the institutions of the Central Trust follow one common software system.
Mm-hmm.
So that will become totally integrated,
mm-hmm.
and it will talk to each other far better, so that at any moment at the Puttaparthi, at the headquarters of the Central Trust, we can get a totality of information of the running of all the institutions
mm-hmm.
which are there. We have introduced, apart from the external audit, which was always there for Central Trust, the concept of internal auditors,
mm-hmm.
standards for corporate governance, the standards for award of contracts, the basis on which they shall be selected. All these have been put into place, so that I would, with humility again, say that we are well on the way to be running a trust as any trust should be run.
Model trust.
In the world on this. And so whether it will be running like a very high quality professional result oriented corporate enterprise, but it will be a spiritual undertaking on that.
And the university has also expanded its campuses.
Yes, we now have the Mudanahalli campus
in Karnataka,
and we are spending a lot of money now to provide them additional hostel accommodation. The university has introduced several departments and new courses. We are looking at syllabus reform, and we are talking on as per the latest academic practices, how we should structure our various courses.
Mm-hmm.
There is some talk of a 4-year degree program, which only I think one or two universities in India have.
Like an honors program?
Yes, mm-hmm. which has been done. This is not yet implemented. It is, I mean, we want to examine it in depth before we do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely I think the university has more facilities. Particularly a lot of improvement has been made in the Ananthapur campus.
Yes, I was hoping to hear that.
I know, that's your old alma mater.
Exactly.
So there has been a lot of new buildings, new hostels and
new faculties.
New faculty also.
Mm-hmm.
And for the staff also we have provided quarters. Even for the people like the watchmen and other people, we have provided quarters. And I think the Ananthapur campus is now far more vibrant. I had been there a few months back for a governing body meeting of the university. And I was very, very happy to see that on that.
That's good to know, sir. Now, sir, you are both the All India President of the Seva Organization as well as a member of the Central Trust. And obviously, you can act and decide in the best interest of both, and you can navigate seamlessly between the two. In the future, if the All India President of the SAI Organization is not a member of the Central Trust, how do you foresee the synergies working?
I want to make sure that there is a close integration between the Central Trust and the Sathya Sai Organization, at least in India, on that. Whether the next All India President will be also a member of the Central Trust is not something I can say today.
Mm-hmm.
But at least I am laying the groundwork that senior appointments within the organization are made with the approval of the Board of Trustees of the Central Trust, so that people become aware as to who are the people now selected for leadership within the organization. And there are certain things I'm doing to make sure that there is a much closer interaction between the organization and the Central Trust on them. I think it is vital for that. And Bhagwan has to guide me and guide both the Board of Trustees, the All India President. It has to guide the Sathya Sai Organization. Bhagwan will do that to make sure, because this is a vital part of the Sai mission. The Sathya Sai Organization in India is functioning in all the states and engaged in so many activities. And it is the public face of the Sai divine mission on them.
Very true.
So we want to make sure that whatever is done is in keeping with the objectives, the principles of the Central Trust.
And sir, how would you describe the synergy between the Indian Sai organization and the International Sai organization?
So far they have been functioning separately. Luckily the international chairman and I talk to each other quite a bit. We keep each other aware of the initiatives that we are taking. But we have to be conscious of the fact that the environment in the two areas is different. India is not the same as the other countries. And what is applicable in India may not necessarily be applicable abroad.
Yeah.
And similarly, what is applicable abroad may not be applicable in India. But if you have a commonality of purpose, a commonality of principles on which an organization such as the Satya Sai organization should function, then I think that is a great thing to achieve on that. And this is something we are again working to bring about a much closer integration between the international organization and the Central Trust. Since we are one side, we are building up a closer relationship with the Indian organization and the Central Trust. It is our desire that the same thing should happen for the international organization with the Central Trust on that. This will take, it is not something you can hurry through, but I think it will be, I think we hasten, but hasten slowly.
Sir, in the last 2 years after the Mahasamadhi, a number of schools and hospitals have come up in various parts of India that bear Swami's name and are not connected to the Central Trust. What is the Central Trust view of these institutions, and do you foresee a likelihood of all these various schools and hospitals uniting under the umbrella of the Central Trust at any point in time?
I don't see that really, because they are schools which an institution set up with different motives compared to the principles of the Sai mission on that. Many of them are profit-making institutions on them. So I don't see these institutions coming under any common umbrella with the Central Trust. What we have tried to do now is to make the people aware of what are the institutions run by the Central Trust. So we are not saying that those institutions are not run by the Central Trust, but we are making people aware of what are run by the Central Trust. So the inference is that what is not on this list is not associated with Bhagwan's divine mission. Frankly, they have plagiarized the name of Bhagwan. They don't have the approval. The government of India has notified the name of Satya Sai, so it is not in order for anybody to adopt this name for any purpose without the approval of the government of India. Now, how do we give teeth to this is something which is under consideration. You know, we do not want to straight away go on into any legal proceedings. But we are trying to use friendly persuasion, the people who run those institutions, either to begin to conform to the principles of the Sai mission or desist from using the name of Satya Sai on them.
Which are the areas of non-conformity?
First of all, they make profit-making institutions.
Okay.
Secondly, they don't subscribe to the same principles. Hospitals are not run free.
I see.
They're mostly on them are charging money. Bhagwan was very categorical that no kind of fees would be charged. There are no such thing as capitation fees. But many of these institutions charge that capitation fee.
Sir, historically, after the principal founder of a movement has left the form, be it Lord Krishna or Jesus the Christ, their legacies have survived either in a centralized model or a decentralized model, either extremes, but not the middle path. In your opinion, sir, when history looks back at the movement as altruistic and loving, as vast and deep and diverse and divine as the Sai movement, what is it likely to see?
I think history will be reflective and responsive to. We are not talking about the immediate future, mm-hmm. but the long-term
future. Yes.
And we look back at that time, I think you will see that people will recognize that Satya Sai Baba had the only solution for the problems of the world today mm-hmm. on this. And we see this, you know, today the kind of things which are happening in the world. And between you and me, let's read the newspaper report about this particular guy who is accused
of the marathon
in Boston.
Boston Marathon.
There's one significant statement he made, mm-hmm. not that I hold a candle for him.
Mm-hmm.
He could be a totally misguided individual.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot ever excuse what he has done.
Yes.
But I think there were people behind him
mm-hmm.
who put him up to this. But what interested me was the statement which he made that people have lost all values.
He said that?
Yes, I read it in the print. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether
it is. The young man from Chechnya originally.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So, you know, if you look at that, a radical individual like him, mm-hmm. perhaps his disillusion was caused by the prevalent atmosphere and the prevalent mm. social milieu, as one may say. So we can see a lot everywhere people are talking about loss of values. They don't know how to go about it, but the moment they come in contact with what Bhagwan has taught for decades, the kind of individual roadmaps that he placed before all human beings, one cannot but subscribe to the fact that if we follow Bhagwan's teachings,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the social problems today will disappear. And as you people always say, things will get worse before they get better.
Mm.
So I think we have, from the Central Trust, from the Sai organization, from Sai devotees, we have to do much, much more on the dissemination of Bhagwan's message. So I do not believe that history will find us wanting. When I use the word us, I do not mean particularly individuals, but will not find the Sai mission wanting. I think history will recognize that here was a person, divine if you believe it, or otherwise if you don't want to believe it, at least could understand what are the ills of civilization and the kind of mess that man has got himself into, and showed him how to get out of this terrible ditch that they have got into. So I am not pessimistic
mm-hmm.
about what history will think about the mission. I think this mission is going to spread, and it will contribute positively to the greater social awareness, and will also change the values by which people live.
Mm-hmm. But under a strong centralized leadership, or more of an on?
I think, you know, while there may be a centralized leadership, may not be the right word, but I would say a central place where the decentralized institutions could touch base.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially that leadership will have to be decentralized.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot function as it functions now, because it functions in the overall scenario of the world. We are functioning in a very limited area.
Mm-hmm.
When you function in a much more broader area, then definitely the leadership will also have to be decentralized.
That seems like a very enlightened perspective. Thank you very much for sharing it with Radio Sai listeners, sir.
It's my pleasure, and it's my good fortune to be periodically invited to talk on Radio Sai. I wish all the listeners of Radio Sai all happiness and to fully participate in the legacy of Bhagwan Baba, which is the only way to happiness in this troubled world of ours. Sai Ram, Karana. Thank
you. Sai Ram, sir. Thank you. Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. You just heard an interview with Mr. V. Srinivasan, the All India President of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization of India and a trustee of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust Prashanthi Nilayam. Listening to all the dedication that goes into keeping the Sai mission vibrant, doesn't it convince you that even today, from the stillness of the Mahasamadhi, divine inspiration is directing all cosmic action, including that of the Sai organization and its central trust? Clearly, Bhagwan's mission will go on. It is now time for our feature presentation, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. It's a series of interviews with Bhagwan's students. Your response to the first two parts of our in-house Fleeting Moments interview with my colleague Raghuram Bhatt has been very encouraging. Thank you so much for that overwhelming warmth that you have shared with us. Here now is part three of my conversation with my colleague Raghu, where he speaks of coping with life in a wheelchair after the accident and how this harsh reality tested his faith in Bhagwan Baba. By the way, in case you have missed the first two parts of this interview, you can catch it at radiosai.org/Sai Students. Sai Students is one word. There is a list of about 160 interviews there with Baba students. So you just look for the name Raghuram Bhatt. Bhatt is spelled B-H-A-T. Over now to the final part of this interview with Raghuram Bhatt. So after this rehabilitation or during the process of rehabilitation, did you have any opportunities to interact with Swami?
In fact, as I said, when I was studying at Vrindavan, I never had an opportunity to interact with Swami. It was only after my injury that I got few good opportunities. So when I was admitted at General Hospital in Whitefield, when I stayed there for 9 months, it was the year 2006, summer vacation. Swami was in Vrindavan and I was at Whitefield nearby. One day I was taken for darshan and I was sitting inside Ramesh Hall, and that day Swami didn't come for darshan. In fact, till that day, every day Swami used to come for darshan, and that day morning when I had gone there, Swami didn't come for darshan. I felt disappointed, but I thought, okay, let me try again next day. So next day evening I had gone for darshan. My parents used to take me to darshan in a car which Lakshmipati sir, the staff in Vrindavan campus, he used to get, and he only used to push the wheelchair and everything. So I went for evening darshan. What happens in Vrindavan is, after evening darshan, boys wait for Swami signal, where Swami calls all the boys inside Thrive Vrindavan to give an exclusive session to all the boys. And that day it so happened that only that day Swami didn't call for Thrive session. Hmm. Till that day Swami used to call for Thrive sessions.
Were you very dejected?
That time also I was very disappointed. Hmm. But I had Swami's darshan. Darshan, and Swami was looking to my side. Mm-hmm. Many boys also told, yeah, Swami was looking to your side. So I was very happy, okay, at least this much. I feel these two instances are like Swami's testing me, testing my faith. Like every day I couldn't go because of my injury. So another day I was taken for darshan, and this time Swami called everyone inside for Thrai session. And I was made to sit on the wheelchair on an exclusive point. It was just next to the door through which Swami will go inside after Aarti. Mm-hmm. So it was a very good spot for me to sit.
It will be hard for him to ignore you then.
Yeah, Swami can't ignore me at that point. So Aarti was over. Swami was coming near me. And Swami looked at me. And Narasimurthy sir told Swami, Swami, this is the boy who fell in Chitravati River 1 year back. Then Swami looked at me sternly and he told, careless. Be careful. That's what he told. Careless, be careful. So he was a little stern, and then he started smiling at me, and he gave some mangoes prasadam, vibhuti prasadam, and I was very happy. That was one of the interaction. And after that, many times I had gone to Thrai, and I was made to sit at that point only. And every time Swami used to come, I used to give a letter to him, and one nice thing used to happen, like, Swami used to come near the door, and one sir, he used to get few fruits to be blessed by Swami in a tray, and it will be distributed to all. So every time when the sir used to get the prasadam in a tray, sometimes it used to be mango, sometimes it used to be orange, sometimes some sweet. Every time Swami used to pick one prasadam and give me. I was just next to Swami sitting on wheelchair. So it was very nice chance. Every time Swami used to pick one prasadam and give me. And I used to try to talk to Swami something, but Swami used to just smile at me and he used to go inside. But he always took my letters. In fact, at two occasions, Swami even patted both my knees. And he told, "You will be fine, don't worry." So all these assurances are the ones because of which even today I am smiling and living. In fact, just immediately after my injury, that was on November 8th, and November 24th, all the Vrindavan boys were supposed to come back to Vrindavan. And all boys were thinking about me and praying to Swami about me. Later I came to know that many boys had done Satcharita Parayanam, praying for me.
Such a lovely sense of brotherhood, isn't
it? Yeah, really. And on 24th, Siddharth Naik, he was sitting right in front, Swami called him, and he told Swami about me. How I fell and all those things. Then Swami told, "Don't worry, tell him he will be completely cured. Tell him to have faith in me." So that was also one big assurance for me that I'll be cured. So these were the small interactions that I had before coming to Prashant Nilayam and settling in Prashant Nilayam.
I see. And then how did Raja Sai happen in your life?
As soon as we came to Prashant Nilayam, we took a house for rent. I, mother, used to stay. Sister was at Bangalore. She had joined for a job. And father had gone back to Mumbai.
So you and your mother were living outside of the ashram?
Yeah, in a rented house.
I see.
Swami's students were so cooperative. The Swami's staff, alumni. Every day they used to come to me, talk to me. Even at hospital also, when I was in general hospital, every day four boys used to come to me with a teacher, and they used to talk to me, cheer me up, tell me so many inspirational stories and all those things. Every day, it was every day. Even in Prashant Nilayam also. One brother, his name is Vinay Vallabh, he used to come to me and he used to give me exercises. He was very fond of exercises. He was an athlete and he thought, "You should not give up like this. I will do physiotherapy for you." So in the evening after his work, he works for Central Trust. So in the evening after his work, he used to come to me, to our house, and he used to give passive exercises for my legs. One day, I just expressed my desire. I told him, "See brother, I am free throughout the day. I just go for Swami's darshan and come back." Boys only used to push the wheelchair, take me to Kulanth Hall to have Swami's darshan. So I told him, "See, throughout the day I am free. I want to do something in the ashram. I just don't want to be idly at home on the bed." Even my parents were feeling very bad, seeing their son on the bed. Then he told, "Okay, let me see." And he told his colleague, Harishankar. And it seems Harishankar brother had worked for Radio Sai voluntarily for a few months. So he thought, "Okay, he can come to Radio Sai. Let us see what he can do."
Mm-hmm.
And by then, I was known for my voice, deep voice. Mm-hmm. All used to say, "Yeah, you got a deep voice." And even when I was at Vrindavan, for some few dramas, I'd given some introductions. So then Harishankar brother told Sai Prakash brother, and they all came home. And Sai Prakash brother spoke to me, and he was very happy with my voice. And he told, "Yeah, you can come, and you can do some announcements at Radio Sai." Actually, I want to say how I came to know about Radio Sai.
Please.
Again, it was when I was doing my sixth semester at Gokulam.
Yeah.
I was staying at Gokulam, right? Boys used to push the wheelchair to classes. And so when I was staying at Gokulam, Ravi Kumar sir had given me a set of Radio Sai.
Like those world space world receiver space, sets.
A digital radio set.
Hmm.
And he used to tell me, "You listen to Radio Sai." And every day I used to constantly listen. And that's how I came to know about Radio Sai. And in fact, I used to get some thought like, okay, if not anything, maybe one day I can contribute something for Radio Sai. Actually, when I was in General Hospital, Whitefield, one day I was feeling very dejected and disappointed, thinking, "Oh my God, what is this? I can't move my hands. I can't move my legs. What I'll do in future?" And that day, what happened is, one auntie came to me. She was a Reiki healer. And she wanted to do some distant healing. She was from Chennai. So she asked a passport size photo of mine. And she told, "I will do some distant healing for you. Reiki healing." I don't know what she will do. But I told, "Okay, you can try." Then she told, "See, you read Tapovanam book." Then I told her, "See, auntie, actually I can't hold a book. I can't even turn pages. So it will be difficult for me to read." Then suddenly she told, you know what, one of my friend, she has read the whole Tapovanam book, made an audio book out of it. And surprisingly, she had the full set of audio book in her back. It was in the form of cassettes, not CDs. And so she gave me the set and I started listening to it. It was so nice listening to an audio book with a soft background music. And that was when I realized that even though I can't do anything for Swami with my hands and legs, still I can maybe make an audiobook or something of Swami's literature. And again, when I started listening to Radio Sai, I connected it with Radio Sai. And so, as I was telling, Brother Sai Prakash came to me and he told, yeah, you start coming to Radio Sai, we'll see what we can do. From that day onwards, whenever a brother only used to push my wheelchair to studio. So, 2007, November 4th, I remember the date exactly. We had come to Puttaparthi and we had decided to stay here permanently. And after Swami's birthday, that was on November 27th, was the first day when I came to Radio Sai. And then Sai Prakash brother started showing me some documentaries, how the voiceover should be with a clean, neutral accent. And November 27th, I came and 4 days I didn't come. Again on December 1st, I started coming on a regular basis, maybe every day or once in 2 days, however it was possible. And I used to come after Swami's darshan in the morning and used to be here till 12 o'clock. I used to watch some documentaries and I used to see others what they do.
Just observing and learning.
Observing and trying to learn. Trying to see where I can fit in. So Sai Prakash brother used to push me back home at 12 o'clock. Then he told Prem. Then Prem also started coming and he started pushing the wheelchair back home. He has helped me a lot actually. In fact, later, whenever the brother told, see, you are doing physiotherapy now, let's also try to make you stand. So we ordered for a standing table, which was there in the rehabilitation center. And every day, Vinayvallabh and Prem used to come home. They used to make me stand. And I used to stand for half an hour. They also will be standing next to me and we all will crack jokes and have fun.
And by Prem, you mean our Radio Sai Prem.
Yeah, our Prem.
Of the afternoon satsang fame.
Yes. Yes. So I started to come to Radio Sai in a wheelchair and boys used to push the wheelchair. But later we bought a motorized wheelchair, which I can operate on my own, and even now I'm using it. It became slightly easy for me to come to studio as I could operate on my own. But initially my accent was not so clean. It had a lot of South Indian accent, so I didn't get a lot of recordings. But I always try to observe what others are doing. So one day I told, okay, come on, keep on keyboard for me. Let me try to type and do some editing. And I tried to do some video editing. It was very slow and very difficult for me to do because I had to use that splint and had to tap with the pen. But slowly I learned video editing. I started doing video editing. Then they shifted me from that studio to this studio. In fact, I am grateful to Professor Venkatraman sir. He agreed to make a ramp here for the studio only for my sake. And I learned some web designing software, Corel Draw, Photoshop. Then I used to do some web designing work.
As a volunteer, just learning.
Yeah, as a volunteer. I was just learning. I never wanted to be at home bedridden.
Yes, of course. You were so young. And
yeah, I was just
so
20,
bored,
21. So I just wanted to do something. I never wanted to be at home. That fighting spirit was there in me. And I always believed in one thing. If we take one step, then Swami will take care of the rest. The one step is up to us to take. We have to take the one step. Then Swami will take 100 steps or 1,000 steps. Once in a while, Professor Venkatraman sir, it seems he used to try to tell Swami inside Ajur Mandir that a boy is coming to studio. And Swami used to be happy. Yeah, okay, okay. Then one day what happened is, I think it was the time when they released the first set of Sai Blossom products. So all boys, all studio boys, went to Ajur Mandir to offer the first set of Sai Blossom product to Swami. And they had a long session with Swami. Swami was talking. It was nice, it seems. And towards the end, when they wanted to take a group photograph with Swami, That time there were 8 of them, including Venkatraman sir. Then Swami told, oh, you are 8 of you. 8 is not a good number. You take one more staff, then it will become 9. And 9 is a good number. That's what the same Swami told. And immediately Venkatraman sir told Swami that, Swami, one boy is coming to studio on a wheelchair. Can we take him? Then Swami told, yes, you can take him. And that's how I joined studio. I was blessed by Swami.
What an opportunity.
Yes, in fact it is. So officially I joined studio on 2008, September 1st. Swami had spoken to them on August 31st. I think it was Central Trust Day or something. December 31st and January 1st every year happens to be the alumni day, where all the alumni of Swami's university come to Prashant Nilayam and gather at Swami's lotus feet. They want to start the new year after having Swami's blessings. Even after coming to Parthi, I didn't have much interaction with Swami. I used to just sit for darshan and Swami used to look at me, and I used to try to give a letter to Swami and talk to Swami, but Swami never spoke to me. So I was slightly feeling dejected and disappointed. Like, Swami is not talking to me. There is no much of improvement in my health. There is no improvement in the movements of my body, etc. I was always feeling like this. So on 31st December, all the alumni who had come had gathered in Purnachandra Auditorium. And I was sitting somewhere in the corner, somewhere back. Like, I thought, okay, anyhow, I'll just sit and have Swami's darshan. Swami may not speak to me.
Hmm.
I was not expecting anything. In fact, I was very disappointed also, like Swami is not interacting with me. Even though I am on wheelchair, that's what I used to think. Before Swami came, the students who were sitting in front of me were distributing some kind of mint chocolate so that if Swami speaks to them,
their breath is fresh.
Yeah, there won't be any bad breath.
Huh.
And they offered me also one. Then I told, no, I don't want any. Swami may not talk to me like that, I thought. And Swami came, he saw me. Then there was a special platform that was made to Swami, and Swami sat there. And then few elders spoke, and then few students went to Swami and gave cards, and they prayed Swami for his divine discourse. In fact, I was sitting at one corner of the hall, little back. Even if Swami has to look at me, he has to turn his head all the way to his left. So that time Swami looked to me, and he beckoned my side. And I didn't realize that it was me. I thought he is calling some boys in front. But all boys started looking at me and they told you, go, go, go. Then I was very happy. I zoomed my wheelchair. I was using a motorized wheelchair where I can operate on my own. It has got a joystick. Then I went near Swami. Then Swami asked, what happened to you? Then I told Swami, I got a spinal cord injury. Then Swami told, back pain? Is it back pain? Then I told, no, Swami, it's a spinal cord injury. Then Swami asked me, you cannot walk? Then I told, no, I can't walk. Then he waved his hand and materialized a golden ring.
That you're wearing on your index finger on the right hand.
Yes.
It's beautiful. It has a image of Bhagwan,
yes,
embossed in gold.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He slipped it on your finger?
Yeah, he only slipped it on my finger. Like from the beginning, as I told, I was very inspired by my mother's sacrifices and her love to me. So I always thought, like, if I get a chance to talk to Swami, I will tell Swami about my mother.
Mm.
I always decided that if Swami speaks to me, I'll tell Swami, Swami, please bless my mother.
Mm-hmm.
So when Swami created the ring, the first thing I told Swami was, Swami, can I give the ring to my mother? My mother has done so much for me.
Mm.
Then Swami immediately told, you keep this ring, I'll talk to her later.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami put the ring on my finger. And then after that, I asked Swami for Pad Namaskar. And Swami compassionately knew that I can't bend much. So he lifted his legs one by one. And I touched his legs and had Pad Namaskar to my heart's content. In fact, first Swami lifted his right leg and I touched Swami's right leg. And after that, I thought, okay, Pad Namaskar is over. So I was looking at Swami's face. And later, Satyajit brother, who was sitting next to Swami, he pointed me and told me, see, Swami has lifted his left leg also and he is waiting for you. Like, he didn't tell in words, he just pointed,
pointed
me.
Pointed, yeah.
I saw, oh, Swami has lifted his left leg, and again I touched Swami's left leg. And I told Swami about my sister also. Then Swami told, I'll speak both to your mother and sister later. In fact, a few days back, my sister was telling, it seems one of her friends had told her that your brother got the Padmanamaskar and it's like Shiva Shakti blessing.
Mm.
One leg of Swami's Lord Shiva's and another leg is of Mother Parvati. So Shiva Parvati blessing. It was nice. After that, Swami did speak to my mother, but it took a long time, 2 years gap. It was during the Sai Sanidhi occasion where Swami had called all the staff and their parents to Purnachandra Auditorium and had spoken to each and every one of us.
Mm-hmm.
That time my mother told Swami about my sister and Swami told, I will take care of her responsibility. Her responsibility is mine.
Mm-hmm.
Like that Swami told. And then mother told about me, Swami, please cure my son. Then Swami told, he will be cured, he will be cured. Don't worry, don't worry. And mother also had Padmanamaskar. And mother told Swami to give me Padmanamaskar. Then Swami just stretched his hand and I also stretched my hand.
So you both shook hands?
Yeah, it was like just like Hasta Namaskar or something.
Hasta Namaskar, nice term, yes. Hand to hand Namaskar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Swami was in his wheelchair and you were in yours, so you both shook hands.
Mm-hmm. In the year 2010, it was the month of April. Unfortunately, I fell down from my bed and I had a hip joint fracture. Then I was admitted to Swami Super Speciality Hospital here at Puttaparthi. And that time, Venkatraman sir told Swami about my fracture and also told that doctors are telling that a surgery is required. But Swami told not to do the surgery and Swami told it's just a fracture, it will heal on its own. He is a young boy, it will heal on its own. That's what it seems Swami told. And Swami gave a lot of vibhuti packets. And later also, once Swami had asked sir about my condition and then Swami had told sir to call the neuro doctor and get a checkup done for me. So Dr. A.S. Hegde came from Super Speciality Hospital Whitefield here and he spoke to me. Like these incidents gave us a lot of courage to lead a life even after the injury. Like what I'm trying to say is, even though I was facing a lot of challenges because of my handicap, but still Swami was always there guiding me, guarding me and looking after me.
What keeps you going, Raghu? You have still a number of challenges.
Yes, every day, every moment is a challenge for me. But I always remember some stories that my friends had told, inspirational stories, and also hang on to Swami's teachings. Like one of the many inspirational stories I would like to narrate.
Please do.
It's from Chicken Soup.
For the Soul.
Yeah, For the Soul. And it's a fictional story, but it has inspired me a lot. It seems there was a teenager, his name was Michael Stone, and he was a very good athlete. His event was pole vault. And he was competing for the Junior Olympic in London for pole vault event.
What is pole vault?
Pole vault is the jump where the athlete will have a long pole
okay.
And they have to cross a certain height.
Right.
So he was a pole vault athlete and he had come to the finals and there were three finalists and he had to cross a certain height. If he crosses the certain height, he wins the gold medal. But the background of Michael Stone was nice and inspiring. Like from his childhood, it seems his mother always told him, see son, if you want to achieve something in life, you have to always dream of achieving it. You should have a vision to achieve the goal and always keep thinking of it. That's what his mother always told in his childhood. But his father had a little different perspective. He told, son, if you want to achieve something, don't dream. You should act. You should work for it. Only if you work for it, then you'll achieve your goal.
Mm.
So his father told that throughout his childhood, and his father himself was his coach, and he trained him very well for the pole vault. And Michael Stone goes on and wins the Junior Olympic gold medal for the pole vault event. Now Michael Stone becomes very great. He earns a lot of name and fame and wealth. And he becomes very great. Now, why is he great? It's not because he won a gold medal. It's not even because he created a world record, but it was simply because he was blind.
Oh.
It seems he was blind and still he won a gold medal in pole vault competition, which is one of the toughest. So when my friend told me this story, even my thinking of the handicap changed. If a person who is blind can do that, even I can do wonders. That's what I thought. There is no limit, even for me, on the wheelchair. Even I can achieve something. And that inspired me a lot. Then I read the book of Lance Armstrong, the autobiography. Like, today he is a fallen hero. Today is 2013. But I read it on 2006. That time he was an inspiration for everyone. It seems he underwent a cancer surgery and brain tumor surgery. And it seems doctors had given him just 40% chance of recovery. And he says when he was on his bed, his focus was always on his cycle. His focus was never on his injury or on his condition. His focus was always on his cycle. So when I read this, that had a great shift on my focus also. Till then, I used to feel dejected and disappointed about my handicap. Then I just thought, I should just change my focus. And I just stopped looking at my handicap and stopped cribbing about it. And I focused on physiotherapy, exercises, and also I started thinking about how I can become a worthy instrument in Swami's mission.
And you are one. The way you edit files, the way you do research for your stories and host a live show, very few people can even dream of doing it without any prior formal training, either in audio editing or in journalism, broadcast journalism. But Raghu, my question to you is, after Swami's Mahasamadhi, did you experience a sense of setback about your hope for a full recovery?
In fact, when Swami was physically there, and I used to go for every darshan, I used to sit there, and every day was a new day and a day of hope.
Yes.
Like Swami, the Lord of the universe himself is coming physically, and anything can happen. He can do anything.
True.
Any miracle. Anytime he can tell me to get up and I'll be able to walk. So every day was a day of hope. And when Swami left his physical body, there was a setback. Like, I didn't get that hope every day. So I used to feel disappointed. But what happened after Swami's Mahasamadhi was, my work here at Radio Sai increased. I started doing more work. In fact, I myself used to ask my colleagues to give me more work, more work.
I know.
So that I'll be busy, occupied, and I'll stop thinking and cribbing about whatever I don't have. They say an idle mind is a devil's workshop. So I just went on concentrating on my work, try to forget the bad days, try to think that Swami is always with us. In fact, when Swami left his physical body, I never believed it. And even now, I don't believe it. And I always believe that Swami will be back with us one day, surely. Swami is the Lord of the universe. He can do anything, any miracle. He will come back. That's what even now I feel.
But then after Swami's Mahasamadhi, many positive developments happened in your personal life.
Yeah, after Swami's Mahasamadhi, many things happened. I got an accommodation inside ashram. We used to stay outside ashram in a rented house, and it used to be very difficult for me to come to studio every day.
Especially with the chaotic traffic outside.
Yeah. And in summer, it used to be very, very hot.
Hot.
I used to go back at 12:30 from here to home, and I was not able to bear the heat. And I always used to pray to Swami to do something. And even in rainy season, it will rain. But whatever it is, rain or sun or anything, I never stopped going to studio. Every day I used to go, whatever it is. I never wanted to be on bed. That fighting spirit was always there in me.
But then after Mahasamadhi, Bhagwan gave you a very nice ground floor, accessible room, right?
Yeah.
Close to the studio.
Yes.
So all those worries are gone now.
And even my sister got a job in Swami Super Speciality Hospital.
So that's working well for the family.
Yeah.
Raghu, in the grand scheme of Bhagwan's mission, given your situation, how do you view your role?
I always look back on Swami's teachings, and Swami has always told to be in the present. Past is past, forget the past. Future is uncertain. What is there with us is the present. Present is the gift of God. That's what Swami has said always. So I always try to be in the present. Like right now, I am on wheelchair. I have minimal hand movements. So with whatever ability I have got, the different ability, what they say, with that I want to do as much as possible and become a worthy instrument in Bhagwan's mission. Right now, only thing efficiently which I can do is speak.
And you speak very well with a nice deep voice, if I may say.
Swami has blessed me with a good voice, that's what I'll say.
Yeah, for a young person you sound like a very mature and wise person.
So I want to do more and more recordings here in the studio for Radio Sai. And I have to work for it, I have to improve my English accent, diction, everything.
And you work hard at it. So you keep striving all the time. I see how often you check dictionary for the pronunciation and meaning of words. You're always at it. Very good.
I always take feedbacks of others. In fact, I would like to say all the listeners to help me in improving my accent and diction. They can write to me through email. And that's what I always try to be in the present. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. In the future, I may start walking. That time my role will be entirely different. I'll be a new person altogether.
And we'll all be cheering you. We'll all be so happy.
I'll be able to work more and do more things if I start walking and be fine.
Of course. Now your ability to tackle your frustrations and limitations has a lot to do with your faith in Swami. Raghu, what would you say to other devotees who are differently abled and going through the same sort of a situation as you are in?
The only thing I would like to say is what Swami has often told everyone in His Divine Discourses. It's not I am who is telling, it's Swami who is telling. Like acceptance, we should accept what has come to us and surrender at Bhagwan's lotus feet all our pain, sorrow, challenges, even happiness also. Like it seems once one student asked Swami, Swami, what is surrender? Sharanagati. So for this, Swami gave a beautiful analogy. He told, see, in a car, there are four gears. First, second, third, fourth, and there is also a reverse gear. Now, when the car is moving in its first gear, there is no problem. When the car is moving in its second gear, there is no problem. So also in third or fourth gear. When does the problem arise? When there is a shift of gear. So what do you do when you shift a gear? You press the clutch. So that's what Swami says. In life, there are four gears. These four gears are sorrow, happiness. Sorrow, happiness. Life goes smoothly in happiness, and also life goes when you are in sorrow. But the problem arises when there is a transition from happiness to sorrow and sorrow to happiness. And that's when you have to press the clutch of surrender. So whatever happens to us, Swami said, we should think it is good for you. It seems Swami told that. Like whatever happens to you, we should think it's good for you. Because nothing can happen without God's will. And it's all God's plan. And God is most compassionate and merciful. And He will always do what is best for us. He won't harm us. He will do what is good for us. In fact, in the beginning of the conversation, I told that when I joined Vrindavan campus and Swami had a hip fracture, it seems Swami had told, Noppu undi kani suffering ledu. That is, I have pain, but there is no suffering. This has always inspired me a lot. What this means actually is, pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. Throughout my life after injury, what I have done is, again, it's Swami's teachings, I have always taken the one step. Swami always says, you take one step and I will take the 100 steps or 1,000 steps. That's what how I finished my graduation. That's what how I joined Radio Sai. I just kept taking one step from my side. That effort, that little effort. We should put that little effort. We should not simply sit and keep crying for our challenges and problems. We should take the one step. Then Swami will take care of the rest. That's what I have experienced, really. It is true.
Very sage advice, Raghu, for a young person. I've learnt a lot listening to you, and I'm sure so have our listeners.
And also, like, the problems and challenges that we face are like a closed door. In our life, there is a door. It closes. That's when we face problems and challenges. But God, in all His mercy, opens another door for us. But the mistake that we do is, we don't take the first step to look at the open door.
We keep crying about the one that's shut in our face.
We always keep looking at the door which is closed, and we always feel disappointed, depressed. It's up to us to take that one step to look at the door which God has opened for us and try to move towards it. Then God will help us. He will hold our hand and carry us with Him. So this is what I've experienced.
How old are you, Raghu, now?
Now I'm 27.
That's a lot of sage advice from a 27-year-old wheelchair-bound person who's differently abled after this tragic accident. I've learned so much listening to you.
It's not my advice. That's what Swami has said.
And you're able to internalize it and dwell on it and incorporate it into your life. That's how you get by each day. Many of us know this advice, but we only may know it intellectually. But to actually combine it into your life and make it a part of it and then move on, that's an incredible achievement for a person of your age and your situation.
I have experienced it and I have felt it's true. All that Swami says is really true.
It is very humbling to hear that. Thank you so much for sharing so candidly and so honestly all that you've been through. I just want to repeat what I said at the outset when I introduced you, because those words are still ringing very true, that you actually walked that line that most people only talk about and intellectualize about, that humbling and creative alchemy that happens when faith meets human experience and encounters its stark and unpleasant realities and changes it and is changed by it. I'm humbled listening to you, Raghu, and I'm sure our listeners will find a lot of profundity in what you have said. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity. And before concluding, I would like to convey my heartfelt thanks to all the Swami students and teachers who have helped me all the way till now and are still helping me. In fact, even in studio, all my colleagues are helping me.
Yes, I notice a very strong sense of camaraderie, how everybody gathers around you whenever we are having a little bit of a treat. You know, people are busy feeding you.
Yeah,
and
they'll be feeding me.
And ensuring that you have as much fun as everybody else.
In fact, when I just enter the studio, all will come to me and they'll put the board, keyboard, mouse, headphones. I can't put any of those on my own. But it's all because of Swami.
True.
Who is the inspiration, and I am also blessed to have such a loving mother who always takes care of me, who is constantly thinking about me.
And praying for you all the time. Her blessings are priceless.
Okay, Sairam, thank you for giving me this opportunity to share my experiences.
Sairam Raghu, thank you very much.
Sairam,
and welcome back. You just heard the concluding part of the Fleeting Moments interview with my colleague, Brother Raghuram Bhatt. Please do send us your feedback. Our email ID, as always, is listener@radiosci.org. It's now time for me to offer morning glory at the lotus feet. Till we meet next Thursday, here is bidding you Sairam.